I saw like this hard selling that just wasn't done in the way that actually grabbed attention and never differentiated products from one another. You could look at one to the next and they all solve for the same thing. So when thinking about how to build that brand, the thought process was, what is going to make us stand out and unique in the second most crowded market next to CRM? How do we align our tonality and our personality with all of these different channels? So between all of these different assets, it's like, what is the like the throughput and the thread that connects all of them together? And it was humor. It mirrored more of like an SNL skit than it did a traditional advertisement. So it was this like comedic take on it. It's really hard to, even if you hate polarizing ads, like ads like that, it's hard to hate this because it's just so funny and well done.
Welcome to the Revenue Rebels podcast, brought to you by Warmly. On this show, we cut straight through the fluff and dive deep into the specific tactics that B2B revenue leaders across sales and marketing are using to find success in today's environment. I'm your host, Alan Zhao.
And the reason for that is because you already had the production team. Something of that production quality has got to be at least like $15,000 to $20,000 if you were to go with an agency.
Yeah. So knowing that, like that was sort of the vision into the future. It's like, if we're going to be creating always on campaigns and constantly creating new assets, you know, are we going to spend $50,000 to $100,000 a piece? That makes zero sense, especially if you're going to scale your production, if you're going to scale your ad creation. So, you know, being able to create hundreds of ads for $2,000 a piece, you know, our bill is $500K, where first it would be a couple million to work with an agency, but where they're paid on retainer and you're paying them hourly for delivery, you know, for deliverables and work that you may not even use. It just doesn't make sense. That's the bet that we took that eventually paid off, especially within the ability to do it efficiently at the scale and also create really unique stuff that I just don't think we would have been able to do if we didn't do it in-house.
Can we talk about the ROI of that? Is there any kind of quantitative metrics we can point back to for a $2,000 investment?
I mean, I would say like even the deals that specifically pointed to that ad as a reason why we were being evaluated was, you know, $500,000 to $1 million just in pipeline on that, outside of the, you know, the attribution that they were able to track back to you on YouTube and OTT. So, I mean, we made sure that within the CMS that like CMS, CRM, that we had everyone that was in our sales team be able to track the ads back if they were mentioned, if they were referenced in any sort of a conversation. And we saw it a million times. I mean, some of the ads, some of the reasons, like, oh, we saw the Jira ad. Like, we even hired people based on that ad from Atlassian, which is really awesome. It was apparently, it went viral at the company and a couple of people emailed us and said, I kind of want to work for this company. So our best product marketer we hired from Atlassian because of that ad. So it definitely paid itself in dividends in terms of deal size pipeline and then also internal hires that we were able to make off of that for $2,000.
Oh my gosh, the damage that was done to your competitors and overall boost of the business goes far beyond even the pipeline produced.
We were on a kind of a kick with that, and you know, I think Atlassian was a little upset with us, and they did this thing, which I can't believe they did, but at their conference about 2 months later, they called us out on stage. Their chief product officer called us out on stage, and he referenced a lot of our billboards, and he made fun of them, and he stated our tagline over and over and over again. And being the BuzzFeed brain that our team was, we said, well, we're going to create a remix out of this. So we took all of his speaking points and we created a song in real time, and we put the song behind it and we remixed his speech into an ad for ClickUp. And then we got that up and running in an hour. And by the time people were leaving the conference, we were flooding their feeds with this ad of their chief product officer effectively creating an advertisement for us. And we had our entire team share it out separately on LinkedIn so that if one person got a cease and desist order, it wouldn't affect the entire push. So one person got it and they weren't able to make us take it down. But it's like that was free. That took an hour of time to do. And it was really effective. I got a ton of emails from people at Atlassian and they were like, please don't tell anyone that I sent you this email. But that was amazing. You know, like, I think they appreciated it too. It was really hard not to laugh.
Yeah, this is what happens when you bring a troll team over into B2B SaaS, a very serious industry. Then magic can happen like this.
You just have to have it's the way of thinking, you know, like it's so embedded in the team that we created, the way that we were able to just, you know, reflex onto things that were happening in culture and newsjack. We then went on to do a ton of campaigns on AI and newsjacking. But you know, that's the mentality. And I think you can't buy that like way of thinking. You know, you have to build it.
I want to dive into that question next. There's this new app. I think it basically creates music for you, and then you give it like a prompt and it'll create a song. So that tactic can actually be used by a lot of people very readily these days. Fascinating. We were thinking about this as well. So given we're talking about creating viral content, how do you think about creating content that can expand reach and go viral? And how do you, like for this video, for example, what's your way of getting it in the hands of as many people as possible?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a company that has, we had 1,200 employees that are all equally invested. They love your brand marketing. They feel like they're along for the ride. You know, you're hiring, you know, and this matters a lot, but you're hiring a lot of people that are brought in by your marketing. If you're very out there with your brand, you know, people are coming in because they want to work for that brand. Of course, they think the product is great, but they want to work for that brand. It's always the fact that like brands are cool. You want to work at a place because they have a great brand and they have brand authority. So a lot of the people that we brought in love the brand already. We're eager to help and shape it. And they loved everything we were producing. So we'd often have the entire company share something out. And when you think about the expansive networks of people within our 1,200 person organization who come from, you know, the Atlassians, who come from the Mondays, who come from all of our competitors or some of, you know, the biggest SaaS companies on the market or in private markets, the manpower that we had that was able to boost kind of a collective virality, even outside of paid channels, was pretty remarkable. So, you know, it was a part of our strategy was whenever we would create something, we would have all of our employees share it on LinkedIn, on their social channels. And that was one way of creating virality. But, you know, a lot of the videos were so viral inherently and just the way that they were, that what we found was a lot of people were ripping them off of YouTube from the paid ad and actually creating sub channels and hosting them on those channels. So one day I did a search for one of our Jira ads and I saw like five other channels that were hosting it where it had hundreds of thousands of views. And I'm like, oh, we're not baking this into the reach or organic, you know, tracking of this ad. It's like we're looking at last touch attribution on our paid ad, but we're not looking at the hundreds of thousands of views that it has organically. So, you know, there's a lot of ways that like if you're creating something that has the potential to go viral, it's going viral in many ways. We'd see the ad circulating on Reddit. We'd see the ad in other places on the internet. So, you know, you can kind of feel the virality when it's in different pockets. It's being spoken about, especially if you're targeting developers and everywhere developers are, they're talking about this ad. You know, that's sort of when you know. You can have mainstream virality, which, and then niche virality.
Got it. I mean, it probably comes down to very high quality content as well. But sounds like share on social,
yeah, for sure.
Do paid ads, get it. That's going to be like the genesis of it. And then it kind of snowballs from there, depending on how viral the content actually is. It'll be shared and cross-shared and posted in communities.
Yeah, the content has to be good. I mean, that's really like, you can do whatever you want and create an entire holistic campaign that involves influencers and every muscle you have. But if the content in itself doesn't have the ability to go viral on its own because of how outlandish it is, how crazy it is, differentiated it is, then it won't work anyway. So it really does come down to the message, the content, how it's presented, how creative you can be.
Last question, any advice on people if they wanted to create viral content that's quality?
Yeah, definitely. I would say things are getting cheaper. It's cheaper now to be able to create something really high quality. If you can, invest in a small production team to start and be able to prove that model out, and then eventually you'll be able to scale it. But you know, the biggest inspiration for us when we were thinking of ideas too was a lot of newsjacking, like thinking about what our ICPs were talking about, what the pain points were, what they were frustrated with, what we were seeing coming up in the news that we could both take advantage of the timeliness of it because everyone was talking about it, and then also could relate it back to different ICPs through versioning. So, you know, the frustration of meetings, how many meetings we're in, how much those meetings cost. We saw a study come out about like the average of cost per meeting. And then we created this very humorous video about the types of people in these meetings and how much money it would cost per person in the meeting holistically. And that kind of went viral on its own too. So thinking about like what's relevant to your target buyers that can also touch on timeliness, that can also potentially go viral. And then you kind of have this trifecta of more ammo. You're talking about something that's already being talked about that sort of puts you in another bucket already. And then if it's a pain point to millions of people, like puts you in that kind of second caliber. And if the content is really great, then, you know, obviously it has the ability to be amplified too.
It's the perfect storm. It sounds so easy, but there's so many things happening here that becomes probably second nature for you guys. But it is fantastic learning about this stuff. I learned a lot. I'm going to be using some of these strategies for the videos that we create. I'm sure our viewers will too. How can people find out more about you?
Connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find, and I love meeting new people and connecting on ideas. So find me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Please connect with Melissa on LinkedIn and then check out ClickUp's content. I think you guys are going to get a lot out of it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
If you're a fan of the Revenue Rebels podcast, please leave us a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Your support goes a long way in helping us bring on more amazing guests. Thank you.
All right. Excited to have Melissa Rosenthal on the show today. She is the CMO at Insight Timer and former chief creative officer at ClickUp, where she grew revenue from 0 to 6 million in 5 years using unconventional B2B playbooks and being hyper-focused on building a best-in-class brand. Before that, she was CRO at Cheddar, as well as Global VP of Creative at BuzzFeed. Just a couple of awards so that our listeners are aware. Melissa was and is a Forbes 30 under 30, as well as Business Insider's 30 most creative people under 30. And today we're going to dive tactically into some of the plays she used to grow ClickUp. Melissa, thank you.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Why don't we dive real quickly into your background so that people have an idea of what you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background, I started very early BuzzFeed. I was actually an intern there before I started working full-time there. And I feel like that really kind of laid the path for my entire career in marketing and everything I've done since. And a couple of reasons. One, BuzzFeed, when I joined, was an idea at the time. It didn't really exist in its current form. The idea was, is there a way that we can think about the web as a social place and create the all-encompassing social web where people connect and share things and create virality through commonalities. And the core pillars of what I learned there were really, how do you connect people through emotion and through humor, through shared belief, through shared commonalities? And is there a way to create content that you can predict to go viral? So that using that as like the framework for everything that I've done since, I've always applied those ways of thinking to everything I've created. All of the marketing that, you know, me and my teams have won is always that, like, how do we form that sense of connection when, I feel like you owe that to BuzzFeed. After BuzzFeed, I helped found a company called Cheddar, which is a live media news company. And I started that with our old BuzzFeed president, John. And then after that, I went into the world of B2B SaaS at ClickUp, and now I am at Insight Timer, back on the B2C side of things.
It's an amazing story. I'm always fascinated by people who have a B2C background and then translate that into B2B practices. Something we'll dive into more ClickUp, I'm sure. So coming right into it, ClickUp, how did it start when you first joined? And then what was the story of growing it to 6 million?
Yeah, ClickUp. After Cheddar, we sold Cheddar, and I was kind of really just looking to figure out what my next move was. Where do I see myself after selling a company? And I had fallen out of love with media. I had fallen out of love with sort of the opportunities that were left in media. I felt like, you know, if we'd kind of just run the well dry with kind of what was left there. But I was always fascinated by tech. And I also saw this really awesome opportunity to be able to bring a challenger brand, a differentiated model and way of thinking to the B2B landscape. Now, like the fact that I wanted to do that and then was able to actually find a company that believed that too and was able to, like, you know, I was able to do that there. I think those are two really unique things. But yeah, I saw, you know, when I looked around in B2B, I just saw this, like, this very over hyper masculine visual design, identity. I saw no humor. I saw screaming value props. I saw like this hard selling that just wasn't done in the way that actually grabbed attention and never differentiated products from one another. You could look at one to the next and they all solve for the same thing. So when thinking about how to build that brand, you know, the thought process was, what is going to make us stand out and unique in the second most crowded market next to CRM? And how do we be bold and vibrant? And luckily, like, you know, and part of the reason I joined was our CEO, Zed. He is bold. He is vibrant. He's everything that the brand is extrapolated into in market, you know, is really core to him. So I think when you're starting with a founder who really embodies the brand that you're looking to build, it makes it much easier and kind of push and pull against someone that didn't believe in brand or didn't believe in the vibrancy and the boldness and differentiation that needed to happen in market, especially if you're a company that's looking to eventually IPO. You know, you have to, and you're going up against, you know, $10 to $50 billion market cap companies. You have to be bold or you won't survive.
Yeah, that's what one of my mentors also said is like, you got to break some glass. When you're small, you try to enter with all these incumbents, you got to be a little bit different, do some crazy stuff, because otherwise the default is you die. So that's awesome that you did that. So you joined the company, the founder was on your side.
Yeah, I mean, he believed in brand from day one. He wanted a legacy brand and to build a legacy brand and market. And, you know, we were building best-in-class software, and to have a best-in-class brand to complement that and to be able to tell our story, you know, was an important piece of it. So I made some hires. I inherited a really great team too. A couple of people that kind of had the same vision, same mission, same hunger on the brand side, and they were fantastic. And the company had already started to spin up a really strong SEO strategy, a really strong CRO strategy. So a lot of the kind of like the groundwork is being laid to build this really, really incredible brand. So, then the differentiation part was definitely a couple of hires that I made from my BuzzFeed days. I believe that in order to do what we wanted to do in market, we needed to hire a fully in-house creative agency and really build that from the ground up too. I didn't believe that we could use any agency that would be able to translate our vision into actual reality and do it in an efficient way and allow us to scale it. I don't know. I don't love agencies. I don't love working with agencies. I think like... there's a push and pull with agencies that you just can't get the same output and the same excellence out of them that you would within building your own team in-house. Major brands, I'm sure they complement each other if you're McDonald's or you know, whoever, where you need to have both. But for us, you know, the vision was we want to do this well and we want to do this right, and we're going to build our own team. So I hired you know, a full production agency. I built that from a lot of the amazing people that I worked with at BuzzFeed. So not only is the, you know, do the ideas and the kind of like the vision come from that area of how do we BuzzFeedify like B2B SaaS, I hired a lot of the people that I worked with there to build a lot of the creative and to be able to infuse every touch point that a consumer and buyer would potentially have with us that personality and the tonality that was different than everything else. And that really did start with hiring, you know, a team of people that were, you know, social first, that were brand first, that were built within that ecosystem that they could then apply it to B2B.
That's incredible. Honestly, it's very cutting edge because today building brands and being differentiated and being fun and B2B SaaS is starting to become people are starting to catch up on that. But to do this 5 years back, like very forward looking. Yeah. So,
I mean, and I owe a lot to, I owe a lot to, you know, like, Zeb and his vision also for being able to let me hire that team. You know, that was going out on a limb as well, saying that I need a couple $1 million to build and scale an agency internally to be able to do everything that we want to do in marketing, and be able to see that when, you know, we were a Series A company. It's kind of remarkable on his end as well. So, you know, it's the right place, right time, right group of people that have the vision that are able to do that and act on it together.
That's crazy. Couple million at the Series A mark dedicated to
it. It is crazy.
That's insane. Investment.
Yeah, I know. I asked for a lot, but that's what you need to deliver. Yeah.
Wow. We might be able to get into a little bit of that, like how you could convince management to let you do these longer term plays. But yeah, proof is in the pudding. So how did you execute the play? Now that you had the team, what did they do every day? What was the strategy? The creative team specifically.
Of course, it's like building a visual identity. It's building a feeling. It's building emotion for every single thing that you do. So we started to evaluate what are the assets that we come out with regularly. You know, our tutorial videos, our product release videos, we were going to be scaling up paid advertising on YouTube, and OTT was now, you know, a big channel for being able to show efficiency and scale. So thinking about like all of the places that we would play, how do we align our tonality and our personality with all of these different channels? So between, you know, all of these different assets, it's like, what is the, like the throughput and the thread that connects all of them together? And it was humor. So in our, everything from our copy to our visual design, you know, it's boldness, it's vibrancy, and it's humor. And if those three things kind of come across, then our brand stands strong. And then everything else, you know, can be much more tied to the specific buyer and use case that you're going after, the ICP. But from a holistic level, you know, we didn't really differentiate between, you know, consumer marketing and enterprise marketing. It's like, let's have our brand holistically feel like this in market. Let's have it be humorous. Let's have it be bold and vibrant. And then everything else can kind of, you know, stretch out from there and expand and be extrapolated into the ICP specific, you know, value props and pain points that we needed to come across. Then we separated things out that way. But when we think about brand, holistically, how do you appear in market? So that's a little bit about how we thought about it. So, I mean, it was, everything was created in house. It was every single asset that you can imagine. We would create songs. We hired a rapper. I mean, we did a lot of things that would really make us stand out. We had the best motion graphics team. So every feature release had a song about the feature. You know, thinking about inspired by like HBO and audio identity, like what does it mean to have an audio identity? And instead of just releasing a feature, how about we release a feature with a catchy jingle and with vibrant popping sounds and visuals? And like, what does that look like? So really just putting a lot of thought into small decisions that eventually impact, you know, a broader strategy.
That's awesome. So now that you've had all these different mediums of delivering your message and then making it vibrant, making it unique, what I've always heard is that if content at the end of the day, no matter how vibrant, how catchy it is, if it doesn't turn into pipeline, then it doesn't really help. And so there's this thinking that like every content that is produced in some way drives them through the buyer journey. So I'm just curious how you made those micro decisions. Like how do I know what content to produce? In what frame? How do I?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like holistically our core ICPs that we're going after. When we're creating performance marketing ads, like, you know, those both, my belief system was that they can build brand, but also drive pipeline. And thinking about how we speak to that ICP and still that humorous tone, that vibrant tone, what does that look like? So all of a sudden you have your brand established, you have your personality of your brand established, and then it trickles down to those, you know, specific ICPs. So for example, you know, we would do a lot of research on Reddit, a lot of what are software developers struggling with the most, and then turning those into humorous comedic frameworks to solve for their pain points. So effectively, you're able to just spin everything into the tonality of what your brand would sound like, what it would say, how it would look. That's sort of how we would approach it. Project managers are constantly struggling with X, Y, and Z. So we're going to create a humorous take and a humorous tone on that. So that we know that we're reaching the right people, we're reaching them with the right pain points, but we're also doing it in a way that's really going to stand out against the competition. So that's how we thought about it. And then there's obviously holistic brand awareness in which you aren't matching it back to a specific ICP. So our billboards, two messages, every city that had knowledge workers that we knew that could potentially be using ClickUp and talking about it. And I did a lot of hand picking of billboards. So even that strategy was very, very hands-on. I would physically pick out units and understand where they were in location to our competitors' headquarters or specific highways and where people would commute back and forth to work. More broadly, the brand messaging on that was one app to replace them all. It's going to make you look up what that is, even if you have no idea, and save one day every week guaranteed a promise, a value prop, a message that, you know, maybe people have a problem with. You know, I think that the best thing that you can do without a phone is be a little bit controversial and make people look you up, make them do a double take, make them talk about it, whether it's positive or negative. But, you know, then you've done your job. So there's that higher level of how everything sounds, everything looks and feels. And then there's the high level positioning messaging, what you want to do in market when you're doing out of phone. And then obviously kind of calling that down to then buyer specific ICP type content.
So it seems like you really covered the entire funnel. From very top awareness of them driving by in a car and seeing your billboard, all the way to their ads, emails, and everything being brand aligned.
Yeah, I mean, I promised our sales team day one that we would always have a seat at the table. And I think, you know, that's what I delivered on. We will never be in a conversation where someone will bring up, why is ClickUp not here?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And How about the ideas of what campaigns to run? How does that get generated?
Yeah.
And then do you have a process?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, at a startup, they come from all over. They come from our product marketing team. They come from our brand team. They come from our CEO. I would say one of the most interesting campaigns that we ran was, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was a campaign that we ran against Jira. And it was very polarizing. It was very reminiscent of the Mac versus PC ads from the 90s. And we decided to do it for a couple of reasons. One, because we were winning such a consistent amount of deals, and we were able, you know, we're looking at some of the Gong information in the Chorus, and in every deal we were winning over Jira for a bunch of specific reasons. And we were like, well, if we can win on a, like, you know, hand-to-hand combat level, we should do a broader campaign against some of the things that people are struggling with Jira. And we also learned a lot of the kind of future things that Jira was about to do. They were about to sunset their on-prem. A lot of people were unhappy with that. It wasn't abroad. I think it wasn't really available. The knowledge wasn't broadly available yet. It was just kind of on a basis of people finding out that this was going to happen. But future prospect Jira buyers didn't know about it. So we just felt like it was the right time to really attack our competition and go after them. Obviously, it was a pretty polarizing campaign. But if you're going to go after a competitor, you're going to punch up. Pick the $100 billion market cap company, right? So we went after them pretty hard. We created a series of ads that we ran pretty heavily with heavily budgeted against YouTube and OTT. And they were about firing Jira because of the reasons why Jira was, you know, failing at work. And a lot of these really comedic ways of kind of representing the challenges that people were facing dealing with Jira. It went really well. You know, we were talked about in developer communities. The ads came up time and time again in discussions. We saw the last touch attribution through some of the channels that we pushed them on. But it was effectively, you know, a really, really successful campaign. And that came from a mix of our sales team and our product marketing team and our brand team. It's a combination. Good ideas can come from anywhere. And I think it's, if you have the data pipeline and infrastructure to be able to support constant data flow, data can produce a lot of really great ideas depending upon where you look.
Can we go dive into the actual production of those ads that you put on YouTube? I'm assuming it's people walking around, and then you had a cast, you had to have a script, all that. So like from beginning to end.
Well, the first one we created, I'll talk about that one because it's my favorite. We wanted to do something where the first ad we came out with would mirror a framework that people were actually used to seeing already. So we chose the pharmaceutical ad framework because it's just so recognizable. When you look up and you see a pharma ad, you know it's a pharma ad. You know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to present, you know, sad people walking around, putting their heads in the ground, and then all of a sudden, you know, the drug pops up and they're playing in fields with flowers and running around with puppies. And the fact that was like such a universally known framework for an advertisement, we decided to just copy that. So we called it a beta tool. And, the pain and the consequences of using Jira were just horrible. You know, they resulted in sadness and underperformance at work. And then once we introduced a beta tool, which was ClickUp, everyone is happy and they're high-fiving and getting work done. And it was just really great. It mirrored more of like an SNL skit than it did a traditional advertisement. So it was sort of this like comedic take on it. It's really hard to, you know, even if you hate polarizing ads, like competitor ads like that, you know, it's hard to hate this because it's just so funny and well done. So we wanted something that was easily kind of approachable. To film it, we used our entire team internally. I think the ad cost us $2,000 to make, which is incredible, like a $2,000 ad. And that was, you know, the investment that we had, you know, from all the entire team that we had created and had in-house. But we used all of our actors were employees. We filmed at our headquarters. We filmed at one of our colleagues' apartment buildings. We filmed at public beaches, so no permits needed. San Diego, you really wanted a permit to film. It really didn't cost as much money at all. And it was one of the most effective ads we ever created.